Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is Mr. Sunshine himself, Vince Guzzo. Vince is president and CEO of Cinemas Guzzo, the largest movie theater in Quebec. He is also a dragon on the CBC TV reality television show Dragon's Den. Season 15 is available for streaming now, and season 16 will be starting soon. Aside from being an entrepreneur, philanthropist, and television personality, he is also a sweet, thoughtful guy who raises money through the Guzzo Family Foundation for charity. He's very interested in mental health, physical health, and economical. So sit back, grab your cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host, Pup. Let's move it into May with Mr. Sunshine, Vince Guzzo. Enjoy the show. Hello.
How are you?
Wonderful. I'm so excited to talk to you, Mr. Sunshine.
Right.
I've been reading up on you for the past half an hour or so, and you've done a lot.
24 hours isn't enough in a day.
Absolutely. I feel you on that. And especially being a parent and being so busy. It's so much. You have five children?
I have five children, four boys, and my youngest is a girl.
Oh, she's got the best guard squad ever.
That's right. She's also the toughest because of the four boys before
her. Exactly. She had to hold her own.
That's right.
What is their age range?
My oldest is 23, then 21, 15, 12, and my daughter's 10.
Oh, wow. So she's got that big, big brother, too.
Yeah.
That's always nice. Mine are 2 years apart, so... It was a little easier when they were small. You may have noticed with yours.
No, I don't know. So I'm an only child. So I wouldn't know the feeling.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So, but yeah, no, I can see the way they're close when they're in the same room, but you know, they're in different cities studying. So they're remote brothers.
So they're in college.
My oldest is in university. He's in St. Lawrence University. So he's last year he's finishing. Coming back and probably going to university here for a law degree or something. My second is in Ottawa U. And he's there for, I guess, another year and a half or something. And then I got, you know, then I got high school and starting senior school. No. So last year, he's going to be in grade 11. And then I have the other one starting middle school. And then my daughter's in grade five.
Do you call it primary school or elementary?
That's elementary.
Okay.
And then we don't have a grade. We don't have a grade 12 or 13. We go. We go waste 2 years in what we call college. And then we try and get a point in life and try and figure out what we want to do at university.
Some of us are still trying to figure that out, I think.
That's right. That's right. You're right.
It's so funny, and you know, having kids. Multiple kids. It's so funny. Sometimes they're different. Like with two of mine, my middle one has known what he wanted to do since probably middle school. And the other one, who's 2 years older, is kind of just now like going, oh, well, maybe I'll do business. And I'm like, bud, you might have want to figure that out a little sooner.
Before.
Right. But they're good. All of my kids are good. They do well in school. You know, they do what they're supposed to do. They help with their father's business and whatnot. So
what does their father do?
He does tile and carpeting. And when the pandemic hit, he kind of, well, the business took a hit. That's something I heard you talking about in an interview, but the business took a hit and they found a new opportunity. I hate to say it, thanks to the pandemic. And that now they go in and they sanitize long-term care facilities.
That's a much needed thing, and it better stay there for way after the pandemic. There's a lot of things in this pandemic that I think we should remember and apply. And if it wasn't for the state of some of our senior citizen homes, I think, you know, the pandemic wouldn't have been as bad.
Absolutely.
That's what gave us a shocker and said, oh my God, you know, like it's really taken seniors residences by storm. I mean, you know, by far, I think I would tell you close to 80% of the debts in Quebec all come from a senior citizen, either publicly run or privately run, mostly from the publicly run. That's the funny thing, you know, where they have limitless cash, that's where the problem seemed to be.
Right.
And everything. But I just hope they keep it in mind for the future.
I know. I would see reports and I would see people arguing it and not understanding it. And it's like, what do you not understand? Have you ever been to a long-term care facility? Because they're the close contact. There's two, maybe three residents to a room sometimes. Of course, it's going to go through like wildfire. Of course.
Yeah. And the fact that, look, the truth of the matter is, I think we've taken that part of society for granted. Mm-hmm. And we never realized that, hey, you know, these are seniors. These are vulnerable people. We actually paying homage to them instead of just, you know, leaving them abandoned in those facilities. In fact, there's some facilities here that are a hard time getting nurses to go in. Mm-hmm. And take care of them, or orderlies, just purposely because people were scared. They were saying, well, you know, the close proximity of all of them.
Right.
You know, and you know, I think there's a lot of soul searching to be done by some of the politicians who made those decisions, mm-hmm. of not letting in family. You know, I mean, people wanted to take their, you know, their loved ones away from the residences and take them in home. You know, it was refused, and many of them passed away in you know, alone. And everything. So it's a really tragic part of the pandemic, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And I feel like other cultures have more reverence for their elders.
That's right. I mean, know? In fact, it's one of the funny things is that, you know, one of the public health directors here was trying to emulate the situation as it is in Italy. And I said to him, you do realize there's no senior citizen homes in Italy, right? They're long care facilities, mm-hmm. but unless you've got a condition, you don't have any of these facilities. So, you know, it's not the same thing. I mean, in Italy, seniors are part of the population. You know, I mean, you know, a lot of people won't admit it, but many young couples still live with their elderlies, owned by their fathers and mothers. You know, it's a little different here. Instead, we seem to have concentrated on the emergency rooms and forgotten. We really forgot the senior citizen homes. And then we woke up when I think it was too late for a big majority of them. Mm-hmm. Passed away.
I don't know. American views on the elderly, because it's like you have a family of like four children.
Yep.
I took mom last month. You take her this month. You know, why are your parents a burden? Why is your, you know, grandparents a burden? It doesn't make any sense to me.
In Europe, there's still this belief that, you know, if you're putting your elderlies in a home, it's because you really can't take care of them, and it's not you don't want to take care of them. And I think there's a fine line, but it's a clear cut line of wanting to and not being able to, right? So, for example, in a lot of long term facilities in Italy, you'll find people with Alzheimer's, dementia, you know, where the family just can't. You know, doesn't have the expertise to take care of their elderly. So, and still they make it a ritual to go every weekend to see, you know, their elderly and so forth and so forth. Here it's almost like, you know, you plan to, you almost don't want to even ask your, you know, your kids to take care of you. You just plan ahead of time by, you know, 60, 65, you're saying, okay, I'm going to sell the house and I'm going to a senior citizen home. And that's where ultimately two different philosophies. I mean, it feels like life is a little more, you know, associated to goods, you know, where we're disposable, mm-hmm. right? Versus, you know, the situation in Europe where there's a longevity to everything, right?
And more tradition.
That's more, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was going to say, going back to when the pandemic began and these senior citizens were not being allowed to be taken home by their family, that has to be a money thing. It has to, you know.
I don't know. Like I said, I mean, I think the real, I think the plan was, you know, and there's been a lot of conspiracy theories, you know, about this and everything. And I got to be honest, I know a lot of politicians, and I don't think the IQ levels are high enough to have, you know, come up with this master plan. I think the truth of the matter is they got scared, and the worst thing to happen when you're managing during a crisis is fear. Because it, you know, you're not trained for that, and not the at least not the politicians that we elected are not ready for that.
It did kind of take the wind out of a lot of people's sails, so to speak. Just like it was a blow from the left, you know, it was like, boom, pandemic. And everybody scrambled for a long time to even get a grasp on what had happened, much less what to do about it.
And I think the whole political correctness that we're living in as a society has made it that, you know, even one, you know, the cost benefit analysis, you know, that we learned in economics didn't apply here. I mean, you know, shutting down, you know, total economies because, you know, supposedly we were saving God knows what, when in reality, what we did is we abandoned the most vulnerable. And all we really had to do, I mean, I said it to a number of people, I said, all we really had to do was actually take our nurses from the emergencies and actually make them do the work in the senior citizen homes, and we would have been fine.
Right.
We would have probably saved lives and not lost as many. But the truth of the matter is that they panicked. I don't think anybody knew what was happening. I think that, you know, if there's one thing that's come out of all of this is we should have our priorities straight before subsidizing a new tramway or a new, you know, a sports stadium. Maybe we should have a few extra hospitals and have the capacities in the event something like this happens again. You know, unfortunately, you know, I don't think politicians are really long-term planners. I think, you know, they plan as long as the next election does, and that's wrong. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, I think that we've seen probably the worst of the physical deaths. Mm-hmm. I think we're still going to have a lot of mental illness and mental health impact from the pandemic that will last for years to come. I mean, you know, I'm sure there's people that are overly panicked, overly anxious. I mean, the amount of medication for anxiety and depression has gone skyrocketed. And that's going to be a problem. You know, I think ultimately we're not out of the woodworks yet. So
even after the pandemic is taken care of, I think that you're right. I think there's going to be years of healing.
Yeah.
That has to come.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, if there's one thing that we've seen is that good looking, charismatic politicians don't make for decision makers. I mean,
right.
The procrastination on their end is, you know, and it's our fault. I always like to say, I mean, you know, I can criticize politicians all I want. It's us, the people that elected them, so we're held accountable. We just need to remember, you know, come the next election, who we voted for and why and what we're expecting in the leadership of tomorrow.
It feels like what we needed was an economist or a business person to come in and say, okay, these are the assets that we have in regards to nurses, doctors, you know, et cetera. We're just going to redistribute. We're going to take, like you said, we're going to take you guys from here. We're going to take you, put you over here where you're needed, because having 20 of you and 18 of you are standing around filing your nails or talking on your phone when we could use 18 of you over here in this retirement home.
That's right.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But ultimately I think the real problem was the vulnerability. You know, I think one of the things that, you know, as much as President Trump seemed to be at least a problem, you know, when he was trying to, you know, downplay the pandemic, the truth of the matter is, I always say to people now, I say, look, he was acting. Maybe he was just trying to convince people not to panic, because ultimately, you know, I have a hard time believing that, you know, President Biden in 30 days got himself 100 million vaccines and that hadn't been pre-planned from the previous administration, right? I think that, you know, we have to remember that there's politicians that are actors. They're there to appease, don't want people to overreact or whatever. So sometimes we've got to calm them down. But ultimately, you know, the real conclusion is that, you know, if vaccines were the solution, well, they should have been asked for. I mean, I know that I told my premier here, you know, which is our head of state for the province of Quebec. I told him, I said, look, you know, he says, what could I have done more? I said, what you could have done is ordered your own vaccines to the federal government later on. Just pay for it now and don't worry about it later, right? I mean, you get the money back later. You know, sometimes they're just not proactive. Sometimes they fall into the bureaucracy of, this is your job, not my job, et cetera, et cetera. And it's a stalemate on progress.
Right. And that whole that's your job. This is my job. That whole mentality, it doesn't work at a fast food level. Why would it work at a global pandemic? We need to help people level. It makes no sense. I feel like I'm the type of person that even if this is my job, you know, for instance, like I'm a pharmacist. If I'm a pharmacist, I am not above taking out the garbage if it needs to be done. That's the kind of worker I am. Nothing is beneath me. I would focus on the other jobs to where it took away from me doing my actual job. But if I am not doing something or if I can help do something, that's the kind of person I am as a worker. It never made sense to me to sit on your butt and when there was things to be done.
You know, the problem with specialization is it makes you an expert in one field. Mm-hmm. The problem is, and like I tell a lot of people, I says, you know, public health isn't about physical health. It's about mm-hmm. physical, it's about mental, and it's about economic health. Because ultimately, if you don't have economic health, it puts anxiety upon you. The anxiety then weakens you can weaken you as physically. And now you become more vulnerable to various other physical issues. That's what a public health expert does. He balances off those three, right? So I always compare it to a recipe for a cake. I mean, you've got ingredients and you've got the quantity of ingredients. Now, you can change them, but doesn't mean you're going to get the same cake, same dessert. And that's where the problem is a lot of politicians came in and said, no, we can't do that. Or, you know, like in our province, at least what's happened is the closures have been excessive, right? And even the WHO has been saying lockdowns are not working, guys. You got to do lockdowns just as a sporadic 1 week, 2 week to try and keep cases under control, but they're not there to be prolonged lockdowns. I mean, movie theaters have been shut for 6 months in
Canada. Oh, don't tell me. I'm going to cry. I miss the movies.
Oh, yeah. It's just crazy. You know what I mean? And it's as if they forget that going to the movies is a social act, but it's a distancing act because, you know, I'm not saying hi to anybody in the auditorium. I don't know. Right? Mm-hmm. So I just sit there, watch a movie. But it's also 2-3 hours of sanity where I forget my problems.
Exactly.
You know, the amateurism has got to stop. I mean, the next, you know, I can understand the last pandemic, real big pandemic like this one was 100 years ago. But Jesus, you know, guys, let's get with the program. I mean, you know, we can figure it out. I'm sure we could have done a better job overall.
Right.
Versus the economic impact that we've created so far.
Do you think we're making strides?
Well, I think the U.S. is doing a great job. I mean, you know, you guys are now vaccinating 18 and 16 year olds. Right. I'm 51. I haven't even been vaccinated yet. It's not even my turn yet. Right. So you can understand that it's a little particular per se. And I think that they've wasted way more time talking about a vaccination passport or all kinds of crazy things like that instead of actually getting the vaccines. Right. I mean, I said to somebody, you know, why did the Israelis, get their vaccine so quickly? And then somebody said, oh, well, because they had this idea, et cetera. I go, so I don't get it. I mean, what? They're the only intelligent people. We couldn't mm-hmm. have thought of that, or we couldn't have paid or whatever, right? It's the whole idea where in us and sort of say, okay, so we didn't do so bad. No. Don't look at the guy in fourth place mm-hmm. and make yourself feel great that you're in third place. Why don't you look at the two guys in front of you and realize you're in third place. You're behind two other guys, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I think it was a U.S. slogan for the Olympics once that said, you know, being in second place is really you're the first of the losers. Go for glory, right? I mean, and it's not to downgrade somebody who's in second place, but at the end of the day, you should aspire to better. So mm-hmm. the fact that we're, you know, Canada is like 48th in the world on vaccines right now, and then we say, yeah, I know, but there's 200 other countries that are mm-hmm. worse than us. Yeah, I know, but there's 47 that are better than us. Why don't we look at them? I mean, I don't want to look at the guys behind me. I want to look at the guys in front of me, right? And that's where I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of work left to do to get out of this. And I think, you know, all of this money that people have indebted themselves, I mean, corporations have, you know, cash flows have been killed. You know, you just got to hope interest rates don't go up for the next 10 years, because if they do, a lot of people won't be able to pay their loans.
And I know that these stimulus packages that Canadians are getting, as opposed to Americans, I think I'm pretty sure that they're better in Canada. I don't know what it is personally.
Yeah, well, I think on a personal level, I think, what was it? In the U.S., I think you had $2,000 for a whole year.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe 2,000 for a year.
Maybe 2,000. We had 2,000 a month. So,
yes.
You know, and it's funny because the other day somebody realized that by doing that, the federal government actually helped the state governments because it's actual taxable dollars. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden it gave out, let's say, $24,000 to everybody. And so now you've got to pay your state as well as your federal taxes. So all of a sudden provinces are making a hell of a lot of money off money they didn't give away, right? So, but ultimately, like I said, I don't think anybody wanted to be on the stimulus packages. I think everybody just wanted to have the right to earn a living. And still today, I mean, you know, we got announced a whole bunch of closures. Gyms are closed again, a whole bunch of stuff. You know, I think religious ceremonies went back down to 25 people instead of 250. You know, so all kinds of changes that are always, you know, at every outbreak, it's as if you're, you know, so you go back, you go forward two steps, and then every outbreak, you go back 10 steps. You know?
Well, it's almost back to square one, I think, but it's almost like, it's almost like a time travel movie where you go and you learn something, but then you go right back, but you know a little bit more at step one. So it's like, okay, well, this time I'm going to do it. I'm going to do this.
Right. But I think the U.S., you know, the way the U.S. is handling it now under Biden, President Biden, is actually putting a lot of pressure on Canada because, you know, states that had been shut for so long are now reopening. And now we're sitting here and saying, okay, wait up a minute. Why is it that they're, you know, they had less restrictions, they had less lockdowns, but they managed to be out of this quicker than we are? I mean, what is it that's not working here? And in fact, a lot of people don't realize that when you lock down for a week or two and then you reopen for a few months and you lock down again, people will actually follow you, right? But if you're locking down for 6 months, you've exasperated me. People are now contesting. And we're lucky, I got to be honest, we're lucky that Canadians don't have the same DNA as Americans where, you know, we're, you know, I mean, you know, we were created, you know, differently as a country versus the U.S. I mean, you guys have, you know, you have a revolutionary background that created you as a country. So it's a lot more aggressive. And so I'd be a lot more worried if I was in the U.S. and we were handling stuff the way we're handling it in Canada. You know, it's not as bad in Canada, but still there is a lot of pushback. People are saying enough is enough. Mm-hmm. Open up, you know, and people that are scared, they can stay home. It's not a problem. But there's no way you're keeping everybody home just because, you know, there's a segment of the population that's scared. Let them get, you know, vaccinated, you know, treat them first and move on.
To put it like in relatable terms, think about being grounded when you were a kid, if you were ever grounded or on restriction. If you were grounded for a week, you were like, eh, whatever. You're grounded for a month. Aren't you going to try to slip out your, you know, your bedroom window?
Yeah. But I said that to everybody. I said, you know, the first 3 months was like a vacation, right? Everybody said, oh, look at this. I got to rekindle with my wife. I got to rekindle with my kids. You know, it's amazing. But after 3 months, now you're saying, what up a minute? You know, now it's starting to get annoying. And after 12 months of this, now it's a jail sentence. I'm expecting the roaring 20s. I mean, I think, you know, the opening of Godzilla versus Kong this weekend proved it. I mean, that movie did $48 million North America. Between you and I think that's what it would have done anyway at this time of the year, right? I mean, so let's not try and overestimate it. But maybe it would have done 70. But 48 million after COVID or in the middle of COVID is an amazing number. Still, you know, you're missing, I would tell you, 3/4 of Canadian theaters. And that's a significant part. I mean, we would have been $10, $15 million more to that bottom line, right? And so it would have been, you know, I think, like I said, I think people are ready to go back to normal, a new normal. You know, I think, you know, I don't think we're going to be hugging, kissing and whatever as easily as before, but we'll get there. I mean, you know, I always like to say, you know, humanity has the resilience to get through traumatic experiences. And that's why we've survived as long as we've survived without going wacko on
right. ourselves. So Kong versus Godzilla did 48 million at the box office?
North America wide, yeah.
North America. But that's with a percentage of theaters still being closed. And that's with probably, I would hope, the majority of theaters are still doing social distancing. So they've got, they don't have 100% capacity. And no. I have not gone to a theater in at least a year. And it's not even just COVID. It's just, you know, busy lifestyle.
Yep.
Are the theaters even offering popcorn? Because
in the
I
US,
can't.
They are. In oh, the okay. US, they are. In my province, they're not. In my province, we have, you know, still this color code, red zone, orange zones, whatever. So any theater in a red zone can't serve any food or drinks. Mm-hmm. So that obviously hurts the bottom line of the theater operator, but it also hurts the amount of people who are willing to go watch a movie. People are saying, like, you know, if I'm not going to get the full experience, why am I going?
Right. Absolutely.
Stay home or whatever. And then obviously you have to remember that the no food or no drink policy is so that you have to wear your mask 24/7 while watching the movie, right? So for 2 hours, you walk in, you watch the movie, and you leave, you got to keep that mask on, which is a bit of a nuisance. Like, we had it, we were okay with the policy when it came to when you were in movement. But then once you were sitting and you were confined to your seat, what's the problem, right? I mean, there's no, and a lot of people, I think a lot of the decisions are done, or people that don't even know how the movie industry works. I mean, I had a guy from public health ask me how we were going to keep the projectionist safe. And I said, you're kidding me, right? I mean, it's an iPad, it's a digital thing. It's my iPad and the movie starts. There's no such thing as a projectionist anymore. So it is what it is, right? And so it's one of those factors, I think, that sometimes movie theaters fall victim of, public servants who just don't understand the industry because they haven't been to a movie in so long, right?
I mean, exactly.
It's the wrong demographic at that point.
You're too rich or you're too disconnected because of your stature, I guess, or your, you know, your status to know that that's not how it works anymore. As you know, that's a romanticism of nostalgic theater. Yeah, the projectionist, you know, he's up there looping the film.
That's
but
right.
No, they don't know because they see the movies in their little private screening rooms at home, you know, in their mansions. And they're making these decisions, for lack of a better word, the little people, you know, but for the businesses, the people that are actually in it and doing it. And
yeah, there is a disconnect. In fact, I mean, it's not a secret. When you know, if your banker's 30, 35, he understands the movie industry because he still goes to the movies. The minute your banker's in his mid-50s, he says, do people still go to the movies? He says, well, I don't know about you, but you're financing a movie company. So let's hope they do, right?
And it's, right.
You know, they sort of, there is a disconnect and there is a certain priority. You know, it's like this, you know, it's like this belief that one day streaming will replace movie theaters. Look, I can tell you this, if Netflix and Disney Plus and so forth haven't been able to make money in the last 12 months, make a real profit in the last 12 months, they never will. I mean, you'll never get a confinement of people at home like you've gotten the last 12 months.
Right.
I mean, so I think it's pretty clear, right? And I use this expression often. I say, look, you got a kitchen at home? And everybody says, yeah, sure. Why not? I mean, okay, have you stopped going to a restaurant because of a kitchen? No. So there you go. You can cook at home. You can watch movies at home, but you really want to do that? You really want to work home? It just doesn't make sense.
No, you have to get out. And the movies is such escapism. It's such a departure. You, like you said, you sit there, the lights come down, the swelling of music or sound, popcorn. I can't, unless the movie is completely engrossing, I have to be doing something else while I'm watching a movie. Either eating popcorn or drinking something.
It's part of the experience, right? Mm-hmm. It's part of the, you know,
it's smell, the sound, the look.
The whole, you're going there and, you know, like you're having a, you know, quick, you know, so in fact, you know, I'm not a big believer of the VIP theaters just because I think it's a little counterintuitive. In other words, going to the movies is a popular form of entertainment, mm-hmm. right? If you're a guy who can afford to pay $100 to go watch a movie, you're probably doing something else. And in fact, we see it. Most of the VIP run kind of movie theaters have been somewhat, you know, had a hard time because the business model doesn't really work, in my opinion. I mean, you know, the cost of infrastructure is 2-3 times what a normal theater is, and you don't have the capacity, you know, to charge what you want and to, you know, and to get the amount of people you need on a seating level when you do have those big blockbusters 26 days a year. Right. Because those are about the days you really need that 400 seat auditorium, but you need it. You know what I mean? That's what's going to drive people to your theater. A complex industry that unfortunately cable companies have come in and thought they would redefine it. You know, streaming platforms have come in. They think they'd redefine it. And ultimately, I always tell people, be very careful with the movie industry. We've been around for 120 years and we've seen VHS come and go. We've seen DVD come and go. We'll probably see streaming come and go. So
you're right. The movie industry goes back to what, the late 1800s? Late 1890s?
Yeah, you know, I always like crazy. To round it off to 1900 and say to myself, it's 120 years we're around. you know, how long have you been around? Like, you know, to Red Box or to Netflix or all those guys. And like I said, we've seen VHS come and go, betas come and gone.
Blockbuster's gone.
Yeah, you know, there you go. And so, you know, ultimately, I don't really have a, you know, fear of movie theaters disappearing. You know, we'll tweak ourselves. We'll make the experience different. And ultimately, the biggest problem we have is having to adapt our screenplays to, you know, the changing times. You know, I mean, if I show my kids a movie from the 70s, they look at me like, seriously, like, you guys watched this and when you were a kid, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you need to woo them a little more, and you gotta, you know, do a little bit of a different take on the screenplay.
It is so funny to show the kids like old movies when they're teenagers, because they're like, what, nobody has a cell phone? It's like, no, nobody had a, what is that? Oh, that's a payphone. You have to put money. Yes, you have to put money in it.
Right.
God, such a culture, like a culture clash, or, you know, it's just so much fun. But think about it, our age to what our parents watched or our grandparents watched. Why are they dancing? Why is it raining? Why are they dancing in the rain? Yeah. God, the movies just bring us so together. I want to say that the last movie I saw in theaters was the movie, I think it was called Alpha, about the boy who found the wolf. Anyways, but the last movie I remember enjoying was Avengers Endgame. And let me tell you, I have it's one of my favorite movies, if not my favorite movie. And I've probably seen it 300 times on the small screen now. I cannot imagine having the feelings I have for that film, or any actually of the MCU films or in the superhero films, if I had not seen them on a big screen.
Oh, sure. It makes the whole difference. I mean, we watched Wonder Woman 2 at home. And everybody was like, seriously, like, can we like put the news on or something? It was, then I said, let's go watch it at the theaters. And in fact, I got a DCP and we watched it in one of my theaters alone. And it was, you know what? It wasn't the best for them anyway, because they still didn't like the movie, but it was like, well, it's a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The sound, the screen's bigger, you know, and whether you like it or not, you're focused on this huge screen in front of you versus you're at home, you get distracted. Acted, you pause, you go to the bathroom, come back, you know, it's all, you're all over the place. You get a call, you take the call, you know, it's a different experience. It's a totally different experience watching a movie in theater versus at home.
Can you imagine if you had never seen Star Wars on the big screen?
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I mean, it's you know, but all those movies, all those epic movies, you know, Gladiator, even The Godfather. I mean, you watch The Godfather on a 72-inch you know, TV, it's like, man, you know, it's why is it so dark? Why is it so, you know, instead you're in an auditorium where the sound's there and the music's like, you know, or even Apocalypse Now. I mean, you know, with the helicopter scenes, you know, it's like, you know, you didn't even know what the, you know, like, oh my God, is the building going to fall? Like, you know, full immersion experience.
I'm a huge fan of the movies. And the one thing about the movies as well is the experience, it harkens back to like Shakespearean theater, where you had the nobles and then you had the carpenters, you know, you had the maid and then her mistress maybe up in a box above her, and everybody at the movies, I could be sitting next to a CEO. Movies bring people together that probably wouldn't necessarily rub elbows outside of it. It's an equalizer because you're there for the enjoyment.
Sure. I have friends that are billionaires who ask me, when's this movie coming out? And they, you know, I'm sitting there, you want me to do a private screening for you? No, I want to watch it with people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they walk in and you know, they're not dressed like you normally see them. You know, it's like, what the hell? What happened? You know, I'm relaxed mode. Okay.
No problem.
And they, you know, watch the movie and they need, you know, I always like to say, you know, going to the movies is that social activity that doesn't obligate you to really be social, right? So you can laugh with 400 people, you can cry with them, you can do lots of things, but you don't have to shake hands, you don't have to say hi to anybody, and you don't even have to exchange names, right? But you've experienced for an hour and a half, 2 hours, a common bond that united you all around that movie. And I think humanity needs more and more of that. You know, sometimes I just want to turn off my phone from the dinging, you know, continuously of messages. So it's crazy as it is.
Right. I think theater concerts and movies and maybe church, depending on what church you go to, are places where you can share a moving experience and not interact at all.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, again, to the end game, you know, the part I'm talking about, when that part happened and, oh, and somebody got the hammer, the theater that I was sitting in erupted. You know, and you can't get that in your living room. No, you cannot.
Right. You're right. And that,
it was, I almost cried. I'm not going to lie to you. I got chills and I almost cried at the experience, at the reaction of the people around me that I didn't know them from Adam.
Yeah.
This is the movies. This is the movies experience.
Yeah, but everybody, and you know, a lot of people don't realize that everybody thinks that if they had more money than God, they would not care about going to the movies. The truth of the matter is everybody wants to remember when they were like everybody else, mm-hmm. right? So like I said, I have billionaire friends who love going to the movies because it reminds them where they came from, right? It's like, it's, they forget, you know, one of them always tells me, you got $100 million, you got 100 million problems. Mm-hmm. You got $1 billion, you got 1 billion problems, right? And so, you know, he wants to connect with mm-hmm. humanity, because he knows that in his everyday life, he's connecting with just numbers or just business people, and there's a lot of fakeness and whatever. He goes to the movies and he says, you know what? I don't know anybody here, but everybody here is watching this movie and is as interested as I am. And we have something in common, and nobody's lying to me about why they're here. Like, nobody knows why I'm here, right? He says, so it's like when you get those, you know, big music celebrities who go back mm-hmm. to where they started and, you know, just want to jam. You know, and not make a big deal about them jamming in their first place they ever played.
But I think you're right. I think unless you're a complete psychopath, I think that most people with incredible successes or incredible wealth would want to remember where they came from and to have that connection. I feel like it would be lonely if you didn't.
But it is very lonely at the top. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a pyramid, right? So the higher up you go, the less people there are at every level. But I mean, I would tell, look, I've met more than my share of music celebrities, especially every year. I do a big party at my house and I raise funds for mental health awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I think the hangarounds seem to have more of an interest in making their client inaccessible, right? Because, you know, but when I actually sit down with the actual talent, he's actually talking to me and I've developed friendships that then we totally bypass the, you know, the hangarounds, and then all of a sudden the guy's human. And so sometimes it's funny, but it's not, you know, it's, for example, it's not Lady Gaga that's a pain in the butt. It's her hangaround. It's the people that are supposedly there to protect her. They're not really there to protect her. I think they're there to give themselves some importance.
No. I think it's to increase their feeling of importance. Absolutely.
Yep.
Like, look at me. I'm so-and-so's handler. Okay, that's good, right? For you. Congratulations, right, on the job. Don't piss off your employer by not letting her or him talk to someone that she might, you know, they might have wanted to talk to.
That's right.
Because they might get home. You might have a party. Lady Gaga's there. And her handler is like, no, 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 no. And then Lady Gaga gets home and goes, what the hell? I wanted to talk to Vince. I had something to talk to.
I mean, I've seen, whenever you hire talent for music talent for an event, they usually send you a rider. And it's funny because sometimes you get this rider and they want 12 Cokes chilled at this degree and they want this. And one day I was reading one of the riders. Tell me something. Who am I feeding here? 15 people or just one guy? He's one performer. Who are the other 15 people who are going to drink all of this alcohol? I mean, I wouldn't put all this alcohol on a table. The guy's going to be totally wasted. He won't be able to perform, right? And you realize that it's, oh, they don't know. What if one of the handlers bumps into a few people that he wants to invite and he wants to, you know? And so it becomes like, you know, using your celebrity status mm-hmm. and because you're the hang around to glorify yourself. But right. Most talent that I know is fairly grounded, is fairly, you know what I mean? Everybody's eccentric in their own way, mm-hmm. but being eccentric doesn't mean you can't connect with people, right? I mean, some of the funniest pictures are Bill Gates, standing in line at McDonald's, or Warren Buffett, just standing in line to take a plane. In other words, they're okay with that. We're the ones who have made it out to be, worse than they really are.
Perception is a hell of a thing. It's like for me personally, when I first started doing this, I was nervous to talk to people sometimes because I was like, what would they possibly, why would they want to talk to me? And I was like, oh, and then after doing a couple of, it was like, these are just people. Yeah. We tend to glorify them, I guess, in our minds a little bit to where we make them unapproachable. But honestly, that's us doing it sometimes.
That's what celebrity status is, right? It's creating this brand that people believe is unattainable. One of the warmest feelings I get is when people realize that, I can be a bit of an ass if I want on Dragon's Den or on the show. But at the end of the day, I'm not really, an ass. I'm just, a bearer of unpopular truths sometimes. Mm-hmm. What can I tell you? I tell you the truth. You don't like it. You don't like it. But I've seen people tell me years later, hey, you know what? I didn't appreciate what you told me, but thanks for having told me, because I actually changed my ways of doing things. And now I can appreciate what you told me, right? It's that humanity that we need to never forget. I mean, it never leaves us, right? It's just we become misunderstood in some sense.
That approachability and humanity, I think it gets buried under these layers of what's expected of you and what people perceive you as. And then to where you forget it, because like you held on to it for the longest time, but then people kept telling you, you're amazing. You're so high above everyone else. At first you're like, I'm not. And then you're like, I am way above everybody else. And I don't need, and then you're right. You're sitting there lonely because you got nobody to talk to.
There's a lot of insecurity in the whole, call it the celebrity status world. Mm-hmm. Sometimes those writers, or sometimes some of the conditions in some of the contracts that are drafted for us, you sit there and you say, really? Do I really need to put that in a contract? Like, I mean, shouldn't it just be normal that, is what it is,
Right. Because let's be honest, that list comes over to you and it's, three bottles of vodka, two bottles of whiskey, 2 liters of Coke or whatever. And you're going, So then the one person that you have, right? And maybe 3 or 4 of their little assistants come. You know that those assistants are putting those bottles of alcohol in their bags and leaving with them. It's ridiculous. If I'm a singer, which I'm not, I'm going to probably ask for the things that are going to help me to complete my performance. I'm going to ask for water or tea, or if I know that I get nervous and a bag of M&Ms is what calms me down.
Factor, sort of like you need a bottle of white wine. It's got to be a Cabernet and it's got to be chilled at this.
Mm-hmm.
How would you know?
Yeah.
How would you know if I'm 1 degree off or 2 degrees off? Like,
do you have a thermometer?
That's what people forget about celebrities, right? Is that they are human at the end of the day. And so what I find always interesting is how their humanity, I don't know why. I mean, it happens to me all the time. I have movie theaters in Montreal, and every time there's a filming crew, from a big US production in Canada, what happens? Call me up and say, hey, my guy wants to see this movie. Okay, when does he want to see it? How many people do you want me to shut down the theater for? No, he wants to see it with everybody else. Mm-hmm. Can you just like get some security there just in case somebody goes crazy on him? But like, he wants to be just like everybody else. That's the humbling part when you sit there and say, geez, they just want to be like everybody else. We're the ones that are making them out to be more than what they really are.
Oh, Dragon's Den. I was looking that up. You guys have been in production since 2006?
Yes, you're right. It's 16 years. Yes. So Dragon's Den is, Shark Tank is the American version, call it, of Dragon's Den.
Which started in Japan.
It was started originally in Japan, then went moved to the UK, and then from the UK moved to us in Canada, and then, did a few other countries and so forth. And Kevin O'Leary, Mr. Wonderful, well, he used to be on Dragon's Den and then went to Shark Tank. Now, they're both, the shows are same format. They're both owned by Sony. Mm-hmm. And they just, I guess, changed the name. Even in Italy, it was called Shark Tank because I think any any really religious, I guess, community or demographic sometimes may associate dragons to the devil.
With the devil.
Yeah, so they try and go away from that. But in Canada, we just associate it to an Asian dragon or and so forth. And so it's been 16 years. Yeah, we're starting filming on the 21st of April. And so hopefully we'll be able to do it without any headaches, without any COVID restrictions. You know, we're in a bubble, just us dragons. And so, you know, unfortunately, the family couldn't come down or any of that stuff, but it was okay. I mean, you know, we got to know each other better for the ones that had, you know, been together for 3 years. So it was fun.
If you can think of off the top of your head, what's one of the craziest concepts that someone's brought to you?
It was some guy who was going to give certification, work certification, without having even had any government. The guy just sat there and he says, when you come out of university, you work for me for free, and then I'll certify that you know how to do something. But who are you to certify anything?
Doesn't like, that break a bunch of laws?
I mean, not only that, but I mean, when we tried to explain to him that it just didn't make sense what he was certifying, he at a certain point he got a little aggravated with us and he says, oh, you guys just don't understand. And I looked at him and I says, yeah, you're right. There's six of us here and we're one dumber than the other. Somehow we all made more money than you, but we're all real big dummies. So get off the set. I mean, I'm sick and tired of you. You know, because it comes to a point where those guys aggravate you, right? They don't just like to say, I like somebody who knows his numbers, who's humble enough, but confident enough. So being overly brash or overly confident and to the point of being rude, you know, is a little annoying.
Hey, there's confident and then there's arrogant. And there's a line.
There's a line. It's a fine line, but there's a line. You'd be surprised. A lot of the ideas that we get pitched are ideas that exist. They just haven't been, the logistics behind the idea hasn't been thought out, or the business plan hasn't been thought out, right? I mean, I just remember that a company like Uber hasn't made a penny yet, right? They haven't made profit yet. Netflix, you know, one of the largest companies in the world, still has not managed to make any money. I mean, they're still bleeding every year. So you sit there and you say like, okay, there's tons of great ideas, but how do I actually quantify to make bucks out of this, right? It's not just about how many followers I have, right? I mean, if followers were really quantifiable into money, a lot of rich people out there, you know, but that's not what it is. Sometimes you've got to find, and believe it or not, sometimes we're only there to find that little comma or that, you know, crossing the T's, dotting the I's and saying, look, this is how you should do it. Now we can actually monetize this.
And it's so funny because Dragon's Den is an entertainment vehicle, but you get that one person that comes in and you go, oh my gosh, all they need is this little thing. They almost got it.
I did a deal on Dragon's Den with a company called Good Pantry. And when I did the deal on air, I sort of liked the three sisters and I thought they, you know, but I really didn't see the 100% potential behind it. It's when I came back to the office and one of my food partners said to me, you do realize this is a revolutionary product, right? And this is what you're talking about. It's cake dressing. It's icing. Like, who cares? Like, I mean, if they can come up with cool enough flavors, then we're in the money. He said, no, Vince, this is 100% real butter icing, shelf stable for a year that doesn't have to be refrigerated. And I go like, I still don't get it. He goes, Vince, refrigerated space in retail space, the most expensive space in all of the grocery store. We're removing it. We're putting it on a regular shelf. This is gold. And in fact, you know, it took us 24 months, but we're redefining that space. I mean, this company may go from $75,000 revenue a year to 12, maybe even 15 million in the first 12 months of its new branding, its new marketing tool. You know, truth of the matter is the three sisters had come up with an amazing idea. They just didn't know how to sell it as the exceptional idea it was. They were selling it as, it's an amazing product. Look at how good it tastes. And, you know, the guys in grocery stores say, I don't care. Everything tastes great. You know, like, give me a loan. But that, hey, wait up a minute. This is about logistics. This is about where this now is and how much space I'm freeing up for you to put an extra ice cream or to put extra stuff instead of me taking the space. You know, right. And so all of a sudden, it became a bombshell of a great idea. You know, unfortunately, when you're in the world of business, money makes it go round, right?
Exactly.
It is what it is.
Get this revolutionary idea that saves saves space or creates more revenue for a company. And it's all in this entertainment vehicle takes us back to, we need to open things back up as soon as we can, as soon as we safely can, because they're not just entertainment, they're educational. We learn more from it. And I love that we started with parenting and we're talking about Dragon's Den, where it seems like you have to kind of be a parent with your people that come in front of you.
Mm-hmm. You got to be a mentor. You got to be trying to inspire.
Right. And you have to give the hard truth. I mean, you know, as a dad, sometimes you got to say, listen, you're 5'6". I don't think that you're going to be on the NBA, hon. It's, oh gosh, it comes full circle.
Yep.
But it has been such a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you. Same here. I'm gonna end our segment like this. At my wedding, the janitor of my high school was invited at my wedding.
Oh.
And everybody said to me, I don't get it. He's the janitor. Yeah, I know. He was the guy who opened the door for me when I got there early. And he's the one who closed the door for me when I left late. So I remembered that.
I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Good night. Bye-bye.